I think pushing yourself in these low risk settings to try new things helps cultivate an adaptability that can pay off later. If you change what you do and stretch yourself in different ways in your teens and 20s, it becomes a lot easier to do so in your 30s, 40s, 50s.
Welcome back to Future Proof. I am Bill Sheridan. I am your host. How are you, by the way? What's new? How's your summer going? You staying cool? Not an easy thing to do this year. It's been brutal, has it not? And I am going to admit it. I am not a summer person. There, I said it. I hate the heat. I hate the humidity. I hate the bugs. I hate everything to do with summer. I am a fall and winter person through and through. I would much rather be cold than hot. And so this is definitely not my time of year. Guess I should have found somewhere else to live other than St. Louis in the summertime, huh? Not a wise choice there, but let's talk about something else, shall we? How about my guest this week? I've got a great one. You're going to love it. Are you ready? Are you sitting down? You'd better grab a seat because you're going to lose it when you hear who I've got on the show this week. I warned you. Now I'm going to tell you, ready or not, my guest this week is Neil Irwin. This guy, I'll tell you what, he's the senior economic correspondent at the New York Times. He's an MBA from Columbia University, best-selling author of The Alchemists, Three Central Bankers and a World on Fire. That's a book about the global financial crisis and its aftermath, which was shortlisted, by the way, for the Financial Times and McKinsey Business Book of the Year Award. He's written a new book now, which is right up our alley. We talk about this stuff a lot on this show before, and the skills, right? The skills we're going to need to remain relevant in an ever-changing world. His new book is called How to Win in a Winner-Take-All World, The Definitive Guide to Adapting and Succeeding in High-Performance Careers. It's a fascinating and important book, especially given the changing and complex world we live in. We'll get to Neil here in just a moment. First, let me start by telling you that this week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So this stuff about skills, about competencies, about what we're going to need to know to succeed going forward, it's so important. And I don't think enough people are really paying enough attention to it, to be quite honest. I think most of us think, look, I spent 4 years in college studying my craft. I know what I need to know. And you know what? You're wrong. You're dead wrong. In a world that's changing and evolving as quickly as this one, the only way we can hope to succeed going forward is to be nimble, to be flexible, to be willing and able to unlearn what we know and to learn completely new skills that will help us change with the times. I mean, look, not to toot my own horn here, but here's an example of what I'm talking about. I'm a journalist by trade. I got my start back in the 90s, early 90s in print journalism. That was back when newspapers were still a thing, but it wasn't long before the writing was on the wall, right? For journalists, the internet was where it was happening. And if we didn't learn to adapt, we'd be history. So I left, I went to work for an online news service. I taught myself HTML. I taught myself the coding skills that I'd need to put my content online. And that helped me take the next step in my career. And granted, HTML, it's not all that relevant anymore, but that's the point. Things are changing really fast these days, and that willingness to forget what I knew and to learn something completely different has carried me forward ever since. And that, I think, is the mindset that we all have to adopt if we want to, stay ahead of this pace of change. What got us here ain't going to get us there. And to a great extent, that's the point that my guest this week, Neil Irwin, makes in his new book, How to Win in a Winner-Take-All World. You can't sit still anymore. Not for a minute. Here's what Irwin writes. He wrote an article for The Atlantic not too long ago, and the name of the article is It's a Winner-Take-All World, Whether You Like It or Not. Here's what he says. He says, quote, "It's important for even low and mid-level workers to understand how their work fits into the broader corporate strategy of their organization. Understanding the shifting economics of a business isn't just for senior executives anymore." And Irwin writes, relatedly, "There is particular value in being a glue person, someone who understands how their specialty fits together with other types of technical expertise, who can ensure that teams containing people with diverse skills can work together to create something greater than the sum of its parts. People also need to cultivate adaptability, to stretch themselves into areas that are uncomfortable rather than just doing more and more of what comes most naturally. This adaptability," Irwin argues, "is a skill that you can develop, just as you can work at becoming better at public speaking or data analysis. It just requires overcoming the natural instinct to keep doing what you're already good at." End quote. So strategic thinking, flexibility, anticipation, communication, storytelling, these are the skills that will make all the difference going forward. And it's kind of interesting, isn't it? In an age of exponential technological advancement, when all the talk is about AI and cognitive computing and blockchain and automation, the skills that are going to keep us relevant going forward are decidedly non-technical. They are, for lack of a better term, human skills. They're skills that help us connect with other people, to create networks, to collaborate with others. The more technical things get, the more human we have to become. And Neil Irwin would argue, the more flexible and nimble and adaptable and willing to learn we have to become. Former Fast Company editor Robert Safian put it this way. He said that we live in a time when, quote, "the most important skill will be the ability to learn new skills," end quote. And another futurist I love, Peter Sheehan, puts it this way. He says, humans should only do work that only humans can do. So there are our marching orders, folks. Learn the skills that are going to set us apart going forward. And realize that these skills aren't the ones we've fallen back on for our entire careers. It's time to get uncomfortable, to unlearn what we've known, and to learn new skills that will drive us forward. And Neil Irwin is here this week to help teach us how. A great conversation this week with as deep a thinker as they come in this area. So without further ado, here is Neil Irwin. Neil, thanks for joining me today. Your book, it really kind of hit home for me because of, my own career path has been, shall we say, meandering, I guess is the word. I started off as a print journalist and editor almost 30 years ago, moved to online journalism when the internet took off, kind of mid to late 90s, moved to corporate communications just after the turn of the century in a profession that I knew nothing about, by the way. And today I'm spending more time as a business coach and a facilitator and having to learn new skills with each step on that path. Now, you know, all those moves, I wouldn't call them intentional, really. They were more kind of opportunistic, but it kind of mirrors, at least in my mind, the reality of work today as you describe it. So I guess my first question is, how has work changed over the past decade or two, and why?
Yeah, I think what you're describing is absolutely what I found is just the new reality of the modern workplace and modern careers. You know, I think there was a time when it seemed like you could start at a company, start in a job, and then get better and better at that job, at that profession over many decades, then, you know, retire at the end of it and have a nice retirement. And I think the reality that we're all living in now is one where major industries are changing all the time. The economics and the strategy of different companies is in flux. The definition of what it takes to have a good career is changing. The definition of a job is changing. You know, the sense of permanent loyalty that an employer might show to an employee and vice versa isn't there anymore. And technology is changing rapidly. And, you know, we're both media people. I, you know, started in the era of print newspapers as well. If you look at how any of the modern media organizations work, it's very different from when it was print, when we made physical newspapers. That was an assembly line. Now it's a much more fluid kind of team-based process. And so I wrote this book to try and help people understand how to navigate this world where all these things are changing. I use the metaphor, it's you know, when seas are stormy, it's much more important if you're out on a sailboat to pay attention to the wind and the currents. And that's where we are today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we're seeing a lot of that with the profession that I work in, the accounting and finance world. Technology advances, just as one example, beginning to automate a lot of the foundational kind of data-driven tasks that have defined the profession for generations. And CPAs, I think, are beginning to understand now that they're going to have to shift mid-career in order to remain relevant. And you know, you're a journalist, and certainly journalism has been hugely impacted by this type of change. What areas are you seeing that have been impacted most by some of these disruptions that you're describing?
I mean, I think finance and accounting is absolutely a great example, and obviously who your listeners are tend to be. You know, I spoke to one person for the book. So the book has a lot of case studies of people who have successfully navigated this world and kind of looked at what they've learned along the way and what's applicable to the rest of us. One of these people is a guy named Bill Zarella, who's currently the CFO of a automated driving startup. When I talked to him, he was the CFO of Fitbit. You know, when he started accounting in the early 1980s, just doing financial planning consisted of doing a spreadsheet on paper. And when you wanted to change one number, you'd had to calculate every number on some giant physical paper spreadsheet. So just changing one number in your forecast meant 2 days of math to try and come up with the end results. Of course, spreadsheets came along very quickly, and we all know how you do that today. You click one number and it's, you know, calculated instantly. But I think the crucial thing in any of these kind of financial professions is understanding, okay, what is technology going to leave unnecessary? What will be automated through AI and machine learning and all these kind of new approaches coming up? How can I be the person who's driving those changes rather than the victim of them? If you're doing a job that you could plausibly imagine a computer being able to do, maybe you need to think about stretching your skills in a new arena or becoming the person who figures out how that software works as opposed to being the victim of that change.
So. I guess I'm curious, and you lay out some of this in the book, but let's talk about what are some of those traits or new skills that you're going to have to master that are going to, you know, define the most successful people going forward.
So I think the crucial thing I learned over and over is the importance in the way organizations work increasingly is being the person who can understand the moving pieces of the business and how they fit together. It's not enough to be the accountant, to be the finance person who just puts their head down and looks at the books or the books are balanced. You have to understand how the financial function fits together with product development, operations, legal, HR, any other areas that are really crucial to an organization working. And the person who's really valuable as a finance person is the person who understands those interconnections. Like here to a relay race, right? When you look at a Olympic relay race, it's not just which team has the fastest runners. They don't just add up the times of four different runners. It's both being a fast runner and getting the handoff right, and that's what you need to be today.
So what I'm hearing is you know, the more that you can be that person who kind of connects the dots or surround yourself with the right people with the right skill sets is kind of what I'm hearing you're talking about here.
Absolutely. I think the idea is that even if you go deep in one area, let's say finance, that you understand the moving pieces and how they fit together in the organization. So it's not just that you are good at keeping the books straight and doing the accounting right. It's that you understand how that function fits together with whether it's operations, product development, software engineering, HR, all the different things the company does, and are a good collaborator with those other functions.
So,
I use this term glue person. Yep.
Yep. That's what I was going to ask that exact question. In the book, you use that phrase glue person. Is that what you're talking about here?
It is. So, if you look at how modern organizations work, there are these cross-functional teams that have to sit around in a glass enclosed conference room together and figure out hard things, make products happen. And they will often include people from radically different types of technical background. In my field, that might be, you know, a traditional journalist combined with software engineers, combined with product people and business side people who come together to make a product. In other corporate settings, that might include the finance function with operations, with software development, all these things. And, you know, it's, again, this gets back to the relay analogy. Getting the handoff right is crucial. If you're the person who maybe you came up through finance, but you understand the language of the software developers. You understand how to collaborate effectively with the legal department. You're far more valuable than somebody who just wants to, you know, put your head in a corner and do your work.
Yeah, we work with a futurist. His name is Dan Burris. Who he the way he puts it is your network is your net worth. And that sounds a little bit about what you're talking about here.
It is, but let me add one piece to that, which is, you know, part of what's going on is to thrive in this modern economy, you have to be more thoughtful and more of a student of how the overall economics and strategy in your industry are changing than once upon a time. I think once upon a time, you could let the CEO and the executives worry about the strategic position of your company. Now, because things are changing so rapidly, you need to be thoughtful about how you can drive change and in what direction change is going in your industry. Again, this is crucial to being the person who is creating that change rather than the victim of it.
So there are a couple of concepts in your book that I'd like to take a couple of minutes to look at. The first is the notion of a T-shaped employee. And this kind of really hits home for me. So our organization, the Business Learning Institute, we're building what we call a T-shaped curriculum to help accounting and finance pros become more future ready. And the way you describe that T-shaped employee, it's exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about these future ready skills. So describe that concept for me and tell me how it applies to this conversation.
So, I mean, you know the term. It goes back to a famous design firm called IDEO, and it's what they talk about wanting. It's people who go extremely deep in one area of technical expertise while having a more shallow understanding, but a real understanding of multiple others. So, you know, there's the shallow crossbar and the deep vertical line on the T. Mm-hmm. And the idea, this very much fits into what we were just talking about, which is if you come up through accounting, through finance, it's not enough to just be deep in accounting and finance. You need to be someone who's deep in accounting and finance who also understands these different kind of operating realities of the organization and can collaborate well with others. I was talking once as part of this book, as part of the report, the book to a recruiter and CEO of a big nonprofit right now. We have two finalists. They're both excellent executives, very strong financial planning and strategy background. I know which one's going to get the job. It's the one who has also worked in some fundraising and worked in operations and has a bit of a broader experience. That executive would be a T-shaped executive in a way that the other candidate might not have been.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the other concept, which I had not actually, I was unfamiliar with it until I came across in your book. So it helped me out in understanding this concept of the, am I pronouncing right, the Pareto optimality? What is that? What does it mean for today's employees?
So normally this idea of something being Pareto optimal, it comes from economics. I cover economics in my day job. And it's the idea that you can't get better on one frontier without getting worse on another frontier. So it's essentially optimizing for an overall economy. And I've applied this to careers because I think it's really applicable. And I think the idea is you want to be optimal in a way that you can't get better at one thing without getting worse at something else. So if you're the very best finance person in your organization and you're somewhat good at marketing, that can be pretty optimal. On the other hand, you can be kind of half and half, right? So a lot of product people, a lot of product development leads are this kind of middle part of that optimal curve. They're pretty good at software development. They're pretty good at kind of strategy. They're pretty good at marketing. They're pretty good at finance. They see how the pieces fit together, and they're good enough at each of those that they can really make that thing work. The thing is, if you're going to be focused on only one area, you have to be so insanely good at it to really have a viable career. That's the point of this kind of cradle optimal line.
Got it. So it's that kind of very broad experience curve there that's going to kind of be the difference for us going forward. What type of advice would you offer, say, a student or a young professional these days? I struggle with this one. I've got a 17-year-old daughter here in the house. She's going to be a senior in high school next year, and it's like I struggle with what I'm. You know, what kind of advice or suggestions I can offer her. But as you know, based on this kind of research, what kind of advice would you give someone who's just getting started on focusing on where they should begin their careers?
So the fantastic advantage you have when you're in your early stages, when you're in college, early jobs in your 20s, grad school, these are situations where you have the freedom to try new things and stretch your kind of intellectual boundaries in a risk setting, right? Once you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, it's much riskier to try something completely new. But when you're in your, you know, teens, 20s, early 30s, that's less true. And I think the key is to take advantage of that. And it involves cultivating this idea of adaptability, which is a key idea of my book. And I think, you know, when we're growing up, we have a natural inclination to, if we're good at something, do more and more of it, right? If you're good at a certain sport, if you are good in the school plays, you keep going back to that because it's fun, it's rewarding, you get told, hey, good job. And I think the challenge is that we have to cut against that instinct sometimes and learn to challenge ourselves to stretch in a direction that does not come as naturally. So, you know, if you're a word and kind of writing person in college, you know, maybe that means taking some computer science classes or some more advanced kind of analytics classes on and you know, statistical analysis or something. Maybe that means trying a language that doesn't come naturally to you. Maybe that means if you're more of a data, you know, math person, entering, you know, going into a school play or writing something for the college paper. I think pushing yourself in these low risk settings to try new things helps cultivate an adaptability that can pay off later. If you change what you do and stretch yourself in different ways in your teens and 20s, it becomes a lot easier to do so in your 30s, 40s, 50s.
And what about those of us, you know, like myself, I'm kind of on the downside of our careers, a little resistant to change, maybe a little stuck in our ways. Where do we start with all of this?
So it's tough, and I grapple with this myself. I'm, you know, I've now been in the media business for 20 years, and it would be nice to just kind of keep doing the same thing for another 25. But life doesn't really work that way.
Right.
I think the key is, look, it is compared to people starting out, it is harder, it is riskier to try and make some big lateral move, to try and move into a completely different industry once you're in your, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. But I think we have to keep pushing ourselves to do so anyway, and to find ways to find things that are adjacent to where we're proven and where we have all this experience, and put that to work in slightly different ways. It means joining a new team in your existing organization. It means volunteering for a project that might be a bit of a stretch, but isn't a radical departure. I think it's just not enough to cover your ears and hope that everything works out okay. I think we have to keep finding ways to kind of understand the shifting economics and technology in our business. Yeah.
What is the future of this profession, accounting and finance? What does the future of this profession look like to you?
So it's certainly more automated, right? So I think there's a lot of kind of back office work that already has been frequently outsourced to different kind of companies that do a lot of back office work. I think the question is, what happens as AI and gets better and better, right? How much of the kind of, you know, kind of how much of what goes into accounting can be automated is kind of rote. And I don't think we know the answers to that yet, right? So I think the way to, you know, we use the word future-proofing. I don't know that there is any such thing as truly future-proofing, but I think the best path is to do these two things. One, become the person who can help drive those shifts and drive automation of whatever can in fact be automated, kind of moving higher up the value chain of accounting. And the other part is being not just, you know, an accountant, but a true person involved in the strategy of a business. And, you know, I think thinking about yourself, you know, your job is not just to get the numbers right. Your job is to make sure that all the business decision makers in your organization have correct information that leads them to make good decisions that make the business more profitable. Thinking of how your role fits into the broader organization, how it ties into all the other elements of how a company works, that's the key to being a real driver of the future, and again, not a victim.
So just to kind of wrap up here, and I guess as a former journalist to a current journalist here, when did the journalism bug strike for you? How did you get drawn to that particular profession?
You know, I always loved, even when I was a little kid, I would watch the evening news with my parents and wanted to read the newspaper and magazines and things more than most kids. I worked on the high school newspaper and then the college newspaper. It kind of came naturally. But I was also very interested in economics and business from a fairly young age. High school economics was my favorite class. And so it kind of became a natural thing. I realized eventually that I wasn't good enough at math to be a PhD economist, but I was pretty good at writing about it. And that's how I ended up doing what I'm doing.
And while we're talking about future of the professions, how about journalism? If any profession has been kind of turned upside down by these disruptions lately, it's been that one. What do you see when you look at the future of your own profession?
So I think all of what we've been talking about with regard to finance and accounting really applies in the media business too. I've been doing this 20 years, and now it's much more a world in which the people who succeed are those who can work on these cross-functional teams, work with people with very different skills to produce great products. And our publisher, the New York Times, A.G. Sulzberger, has said that journalism is now a team sport. And that means that you have to be the person who can be a real effective team player, not just somebody who goes off on your own. And I think that's a powerful idea.
Yeah, and I think that's a great note to end on. That applies to so much of what we do today. So, Neil, thanks for the time. Thanks for the insights. It's been a great conversation. I appreciate you being here. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Bill.
That was Neil Irwin, senior economic correspondent at the New York Times and author of How to Win in a Winner-Take-All World. Find out more and order his book. It's a great one. It's a good read. You can find all about that at neilirwin.com. That's NEILIRWIN.com. And remember, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in a rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPA. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning. That's all I got for you this week. Have a great week, folks. We'll talk to you again soon.